Good to see you. One other thing I guess I should mention. I always hope they're going to change this, but I guess we fall back Saturday evening. So Sunday, you get an extra hour of sleep. So please keep that in mind. Most of us have the... I know I use my phone as more of a watch, or this electronic watch, and so it does it all for me. But in case you need to set some clocks back, just keep that in mind this weekend. All right, so we have been looking at the kings. In our last few studies, we've been looking at Ahab, and you probably remember he is reigning in the north in Israel. And in Samaria, and so as we've been looking and examining his life, we'll continue that tonight. We're almost to the end of that. We'll finish that up quickly, I think, here at the beginning. But if you remember Ahab, the time period, if you were to look at a timeline, he reigned from about 875 to 854 B.C., and so we'll finish looking up at him, looking at his life tonight. And then we're going to talk about Jehoshaphat. We're going to go back to the south and look at what's going on in Judah, as Jehoshaphat will take the reins from Asa, and he will begin to reign in about 874 B.C. to 850. So you notice just from that time range that he and Ahab reigned pretty much concurrently with one another, with Hosea taking the reign from Ahab in the north in about 855 and so to 854. Very short reign, and we'll talk about why that is as we move forward. Well, we may not get to him tonight, but we will strive to go that direction.
It's also when Elijah is replaced by Elisha, mm-hmm. at the end of Ahab's reign.
Right, yeah. And we won't get into that this week, but in the next few weeks, that'll be a big, You're exactly right. And we've kind of seen that begin as God had instructed Elijah to go and to take Elisha under his wing. And so he's going to be learning under the tutelage of Elijah. And then we'll see, of course, the dramatic way God takes Elijah out of this world. And we'll cover that in the next few weeks. Good question, or good comment. All right, so let's go back to Ahab real quickly. We are nearing the end of his life. Now, you remember, Ahab is one of those guys who keeps getting himself into trouble when he doesn't need to. You may remember a couple weeks ago we were looking at the vineyard of whom?
Naboth.
Remember Naboth's vineyard? Ahab wanted it. Naboth wouldn't sell it to him. He pouted like a little child. And so Jezebel said, "I'll get it for you." And she, of course, then had him murdered. And Ahab took it. And of course, God then punished Ahab, but seemingly Ahab shows some repentance. And so for about 3 years, Ahab has some peace. Well, sometimes in the times of peace and tranquility is when we are at greatest danger of temptation. And so you get into 1 Kings 22, and that's where we left off. So you want to go ahead and turn to 1 Kings 22. This is where we all were. So it's been 3 years, and what happens? So you got Jehoshaphat, who has entered into a marriage pact with Ahab. And he comes to Samaria to visit, and Ahab has a plan. You'd almost think it was a sitcom, kind of the way it all sits up or starts out. You have this piece of property that Ahab is, this Ramoth Gilead area that Ahab is like, "That's ours, isn't it? Let's go take it back." And he gets Jehoshaphat to go in with him on this. But before they do, what's Jehoshaphat say?
Let's inquire of the Lord.
Let's inquire of the Lord. Let's ask Him. I mean, before we do this, we should at least contact God. And you remember He has all those prophets come and they begin to prophesy. What are they all saying?
Everything Ahab wants to hear.
Yeah. They're saying everything Ahab wants to hear, which is what?
Victory.
Victory. Go and take it. God's given it to you. Even at one point, one of the guys, Zedekiah. Zedekiah will at one point take antlers, like he's a ram, and he begins to charge around. He says, "This is the way you're going to do to your enemies." Well, Jehoshaphat isn't satisfied with this. He says, "Aren't there any other prophets that we can inquire?" What does that say to you about Jehoshaphat and the way he seems to take in all this scene? Okay, he's showing a distrust for all these prophets.
It also distinguishes between those prophets and the prophet of the Lord.
Yeah.
Is there not a prophet of the Lord we can inquire? All these prophets they have brought are all prophets of Baal and others.
Now, so he says, isn't there another prophet? There is. What's his name? What is it? Micaiah. Right? There's this guy Micaiah. And Ahab says what he usually says about the prophet of God. A true prophet of God. What is that? He never says anything good about me. Every time I call him, he's always got something bad to say. And it's funny because I find the humor in this part is he comes and Micaiah, what does he do first when he finally gets there? Remember, when they bring him in, all the prophets, they say to Micaiah what? What do they tell Micaiah to do? Tell him what he wants to hear. I'm paraphrasing there. But basically, they say, prophesy good about him. They know this man. They know what he's looking for. And they've already sold out. But Micaiah, and I think it's sarcasm on his part. And I'll tell you why. But what does he first say to... Yeah, he says, go out and win. Now, why might that be kind of a sarcastic? You might think he's saying that very sarcastically. Well, what's Ahab's response?
He reminds him that his promise that he would always tell the truth.
How many times am I going to make you swear to me you're telling me the truth? I mean, Ahab knew this wasn't really like. I'm assuming that Ahab is thinking, I can tell you're being sarcastic with me. And then he gives him the real prophecy, which is what? Go to verse 19. He says, therefore hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne and all the host of heaven standing beside him on his right hand and on his left. And the Lord said, well, before that, I'm sorry, let me back up here. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Let's go to 16. I'll come back to 19 in just a moment, but this is where we ended last week. So 16, he says, but the king said to him, how many times will I make you swear that you speak to me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord? And he said, I saw all Israel scattered on the mountain as sheep with no shepherd. And the Lord said, these have no master, let each return to his home in peace. And so what's his real prophecy, or what was God really intending him to, what message is he bringing?
They're going to lose.
They're going to lose, but not just that. It's even more than that. What? Who's going to die? Ahab's going to die. It's not just that you're going to lose this battle and live to fight another day. He says they're like sheep without a shepherd. In other words, what he's saying is, Ahab, when you go into battle, it's going to be it. And so that, you know, that's kind of a harsh thing. And then you kind of, you have this retort, this response in verse 18. From the king to Jehoshaphat. Did I not tell you that he would not prophesy good concerning me? Right? Didn't I tell you? I told you he wasn't going to say anything good. And so then you get to verse 19. And Micaiah goes on to say, which is kind of an interesting statement. I've already read 19. I won't go back and reread that. But basically, he says, God is sending this message, 19. Verse 20, and the Lord said, who will entice Ahab that he may go up and fall at Ramoth-Gilead? Now, who's God asking that question of?
The heavenly host.
Yeah, the heavenly host, the messengers of God. He's asking them, for what?
To volunteer.
To volunteer, yeah. To do what? To do what?
To go convince him to go to battle.
Okay. To go convince him. Now, let's continue reading, and I have more questions. But then a spirit, and we can imply from that, this is some kind of angelic or some kind of spiritual being, came forward and stood before the Lord, saying, I will entice him. And the Lord said to him, by what means? And he said, I will go out, and I will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And he said, you are to entice him, and you shall succeed. Go out and do so. Now therefore, behold, the Lord has put a lying spirit in the mouth of all these prophets. The Lord has declared disaster for you. Now there's a few things that are interesting to me in this. But first, what's Micaiah saying about the prophets of Ahab?
They tell you what you want to hear, not the truth.
Yeah. And they're all tools of what?
Satan.
They're all liars. He's the father of lies, right? John 8:44. What do you make of this, though? Is God tempting Ahab? Is it? It's a midweek. It's late. We're tired. Okay. So they could still change.
Yeah.
All right. That's an important point. I want to come back to that. That's very important. Yes, ma'am.
I was thinking, you know how when a child just keeps asking, at some point you just go ahead and give in to them? So they're pretty much just, the Lord, the way I received it, is that the Lord is just letting them go on to his own devices.
Okay. Good point.
Anyway,
just like when they were, when Israel wanted a king, and God told them everything was going to happen, he finally said, okay, I'll even appoint you one.
So yeah. What do y'all think? Any other thoughts? Is God tempting Ahab? Now, is it, it's James, isn't it? James chapter 1. God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. Is this in conflict with James 1? I think it's verse 12. Okay. I agree. But why? Why not?
Well, because God isn't tempting him to do evil. God's actually telling him, if you go, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So temptation is, are you going to do good and humble yourself and follow my instructions, or are you going to rebel and take the other path?
Okay. Is this a little bit or a lot like Job? Do you see any similarities between what's going on here and what happened with Job? Yes, no. So, I don't know. What do you think? So, I can't definitively say this. This is my opinion, so please take it as an opinion. But could it possibly be the lying spirit here is Satan? The one who steps forward to entice him could be Satan? I don't know. It's something to think about. It's something, I think, again, my opinion, you don't have to take that as gospel. But I know what James says, that God tempts no man. And God cannot what? Hebrews. Lie. A lie cannot come from God. God, it is an impossibility. It's not just something God doesn't want to do. The Hebrews writer says it's impossible for God to lie. God cannot. Yet Jesus tells us in John 8, and I believe it's 44, that Satan is what?
He's a liar.
And the father of lies. Right? He was a murderer from the beginning. I think it's interesting here what's going on. Now, I want to go back to what Ms. Lynn said earlier. I think that's a good point. So, what is God really doing here for Ahab? He's got a choice before him. He's got all of these prophets over here, all screaming a lie. He's got one prophet over here professing the truth. Now, is that very different than the world we live in today? Is it very different? It's not, is it? The majority of all living are all believing and professing a lie. Many lies. There are a few, Matthew 7, 13, 14, there are a few who are professing the truth. And so as individuals, we have choices to make, don't we? We can either believe the majority and go along with them, whereas Jesus says in Matthew 7, 13, what's going to happen to them?
End up in destruction.
They're going to end up in destruction. Yet the few who choose the narrow, straight gate are going to go on to eternal life. And so God is giving Ahab, is he forcing Ahab into a decision? Now, he's forcing Ahab to make a decision, but he's not forcing Ahab into making a particular decision. He has the opportunity to choose God or the world and its lies. Now, God says to the spirit, whoever it is, he says, you're going to be successful. But God knowing he's going to be successful, does that make God into forcing Ahab into the decision? There's a difference between knowing the outcome of a situation than it is forcing someone into it. And so Ahab had a choice. Now as we read on, what we find out is Ahab chooses to go along, just like the children of Israel, the first time they came to the promised land. Do you remember that one? How many spies were sent out? 12. How many came back with an evil report? How many came back with a faithful report? 2. Again, Israel, like Ahab, had a choice to make. Do I believe the faithful, good report, or do I give in to the evil report? Now, what did they do? They gave in. But they had a choice to make. And so that's what's facing Ahab here. And
you go to number two, he's had 3 years of peace. And he could have been changing a lot of things, but instead he spent at least part of that time trying to figure out how to get help to go get Israel and Gilead and trying to involve Judah in a problem.
Yeah. And we'll come back to this when we talk about Jehoshaphat more, but he incorporated, he brought, what is it, misery loves company? Well, sin loves company, right? Sin loves companions, and it will try to draw others into its sin. Well, that's what happens here. Now, for Jehoshaphat's part, he got pulled in. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, but so he's faced with a decision. Now, what happens if he says, you know what? Although Micaiah always says bad things about me, he's telling the truth. Let's just don't go to war. What would have happened? Would he have died on the battlefield? No, he wouldn't have, would he? But he made his choice. And I want to go down to the end of the chapter here. Go down to verse 26. Somebody read 26 through 28, please.
Then the king of Israel said, take Micaiah and return him to Ammon, the governor of the city, to Joash, the king's son, and say, thus says the king, put this man in prison and feed him sparingly with bread and water until I return safely. Micaiah said, if you indeed return safely, the Lord has not spoken by me. And he said, listen, all you people.
So, again, he attacks the messenger because he doesn't like the message. He wants to throw him in prison. I want you to notice that last statement by Micaiah. What is his statement? What do you think he's trying to proclaim? Like, what's the purpose of it?
Said is true, and therefore, if it don't come true, then I didn't speak by God. Mm-hmm. He knew he did.
Who's the benefit? Who is he trying to reach with that statement? Yeah, I find it amazing. Even in this moment, when he could have pitied himself, because he could have said, "All I am is just trying to do the work of God, and here I am being punished." Even in this moment, he's a humble enough man to say, you know what, I can be evangelistic here. He's evangelizing, isn't he? He's saying, watch what happens. And know who God is really speaking through. So listen to the message. That's evangelism. Now, like a lot of evangelist efforts, it doesn't go as well as it should, but it at least gives opportunity for people. All right, so we go on later in the chapter. Go down to verse, let's just go ahead and read this section. I know it's a little lengthy, but somebody read 29 through 40, please.
I'll read.
Thanks, Mr. Rainey.
So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth Gilead. And the king of Israel said unto Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself and enter into the battle, but put thou on thy robes. And the king of Israel disguised himself and went into battle. But the king of Syria commanded his 32 captains that had rule over his chariots, saying, fight neither with small or great, save only with the king of Israel. And it came to pass, when the captains of the chariots saw Jehoshaphat, that they said, surely it is the king of Israel. And they turned aside to fight against him, and Jehoshaphat cried out. And it came to pass, when the captains of the chariots perceived that it was not the king of Israel, that they turned back from pursuing him. And a certain man drew a bow at a venture and smote the king of Israel between the joints of the harness. Wherefore he said unto the driver of his chariot, turn thine hand and carry me out of the host, for I am wounded. And the battle increased that day, and the king was stayed up in his chariot against the Syrians, and died at evening. And the blood ran out of the wound into the midst of the chariot. And there went a proclamation throughout the host about the going down of the sun, saying, every man to his city, and every man to his own country. So the king died and was brought to Samaria, and they buried the king in Samaria. And one washed the chariot in the pool of Samaria, and the dogs licked up his blood, and they washed his armor, according unto the word of the Lord which he spake. Now the rest of the acts of Ahab, and all that he did, and the ivory house which he made, and all the cities that he built, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the king of Israel? So Ahab slept with his fathers, and Uzziah, his son, reigned in his stead. And Jehoshaphat,
That's good. Thank you for reading that. So let's talk about this for just a moment. So they go into battle. Now, my first question to us to think about is from a strategic standpoint of going into battle, was his plan a good plan? Would human men believe that was a good plan?
No.
I believe it was, because he was right? Because they were targeting him. Now, how he knew that, or if it was just a coincidence, we don't know. But from a human standpoint, it may have seemed very intelligent what he did. But what does Paul say about the wisdom of men in the Corinthian letter? He says, I will make foolish the wisdom of man by man's foolishness. Right? In other words, what he's saying is, he's going to take what we would think would be foolish, and he'll make that wisdom. And he'll take our wisdom, our haughtiness about how smart we are, and he'll make us fools. I think it's interesting that the text says, and a certain man. Now, what's the indication of that? A certain man. This wasn't an important warrior. This wasn't some big soldier in the Syrian army. He was just a normal guy. He just happened to shoot that particular guy. He wasn't out to kill the king. He was out to win a war. And he's just doing what he thought he needed to do. He shot. And not only that, he happened to shoot the perfect shot. Now maybe he was a marksman and knew how to get between the breastplates of armor just right. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think he shot the shot God wanted him to shoot. And it hit the target. And what a dishonorable way to die. Why is it dishonorable the way he died?
Well, he didn't die as a king.
He didn't die as a king. He died disguising himself. Right? He tried to play a trick. He tried to play a trick on Jehoshaphat, by the way. He put Jehoshaphat into danger, didn't he? Sometimes we think we're smarter than we are. Sometimes we think we can outsmart God and all the other people in our lives. And sometimes God makes us into a fool. And I think it's no coincidence also, where did he, what happened to him after that shot hit its mark? Can't come in notes because I'll, what was that? But they took him up, propped him up in a chariot so he could watch. Why did he wait to die until the evening? Is God trying to drive something home to him? Look at what you did. This is your fault. And then he died. Only after they had been defeated. Now, back before when he had stolen through Jezebel the vineyard of Naboth, what was God's punishment on him? Do you remember? Do you recall the punishment God had originally set upon him? He said, your blood, based, I don't know if I'm quoting exactly, but you can go back and look. But your blood will be spilled in the place Naboth's blood was spilled. Now God initially said, because of the repentant heart of Ahab, said, I'm going to relent on that. So then why does Ahab end up here?
God said that his blood would be shed in the same spot, and the dog would lick it up.
But God had relented on that. Why does he end up there? I agree with you, but why does he end up there? Because remember, God said, I won't bring the destruction in his lifetime. It'll be in his children's lifetime. Did Ahab take for granted the mercy and grace God had shown him? What's the lesson in that for you and me? Be careful not to become arrogant in your salvation. We are not saved because you and I are good. It's not because of our holiness or our righteousness. Every one of us who have obeyed the gospel and are in a saved relationship with God, it has nothing to do with our own worthiness. But for the grace of God, go I. Don't take your salvation for granted. Well, he had taken his salvation from God for granted. God had showed him grace. But in his arrogance, 3 years later, he forgot the grace of God and arrogantly went to a war God said, don't go. Didn't he? It's an important lesson, I think, to learn.
The thing I don't understand about this whole episode is Jehoshaphat. He saw... He wanted a prophet of the Lord. Can you not find as a prophet of the Lord? The prophet of the Lord comes and says, don't go. And yet he goes.
So, can I hold my thoughts about that until we get to Jehoshaphat? That's a great question. And we're going to have to deal with that. Because he has a part in all this as well. But give me just a few minutes.
It's not on the same, but it says something. In the version that I'm reading, it says something about his body was taken to Samaria, buried there, and the chariot washed beside the pool of Samaria, and the dogs lifted up his blood at the place where the prostitutes bathed, just the Lord has promised. I'm not making the connection by the Naboth
thing.
And the vineyard.
So that pool must have been close to that vineyard. Or, no, it was close to where they killed Naboth. Not the vineyard, but where they killed Naboth. So remember, he was stoned, right? Stoned to death. So that must have been in the same area. Any other questions? Good thoughts? Before we get to Jehoshaphat, I don't know if we'll get to... depth tonight. But I want to go back to Jezebel. So you got Ahab. Jezebel is tied closely with Ahab, isn't she? But we have to wait a little bit before we find out what happened to Jezebel. So I'm going to actually fast forward into 2 Kings chapter 9 for just a minute. Because I thought, you got to tie these two together. They're kind of tied at the hip. And so so let's go on to 2 Kings chapter 9. And I just want to read verses 30 through 37. Now, what was the prophecy laid on her? Do you remember? What did God say would happen to her? He didn't just give a prophecy against Ahab, but he also prophesied against Jezebel. If you go back to to 1 Kings 21, go to verse 20 is when Elijah comes to Ahab. And verse 21, verse 20. Have you found me, O my enemy? That's Ahab to Elijah. And Elijah answers, what does he say? I have found you because you have sold yourself to do what is evil in the sight of the Lord. Behold, I will bring disaster upon you. I will utterly burn you up, and I will cut off from Ahab every male, bond or free, and I will make the house, I will make your house like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha, the son of Ajiah. For the anger of the Lord has provoked me because you have made Israel to sin. And of Jezebel, the Lord also said, the dogs shall eat Jezebel within the walls of Jezreel. Anyone belonging to Ahab who dies in the city, the dogs shall eat. And of anyone who dies in the open country, the birds of the heaven shall eat. So God says to the prophet Elijah, Jezebel, very gruesomely, there's some gruesome deaths. I'm not saying that word right. Gruesome deaths in the Bible. Well, Jezebel, I mean, eaten by dogs. Pretty rough. Well, let's go to 2 Kings chapter 9. Let's begin reading at verse 30. 2 Kings 9 and verse 30. When Jehu, that's the king later on, I believe Judah, came to Jezreel, Jezebel heard of it, and she painted her eyes and adorned her head and looked out of the window. So she's trying to disguise herself. And Jehu entered the gate. She said, is it peace, you Zimri, murderer of your master? And he lifted up his face to the window and said, who is on my side? Who? Two or three eunuchs looked at him. He said, throw her down. So they threw her down, and some of her blood spattered the wall and on the horses, and they trampled on her. Verse 34, they went in and ate and drank, and he said, see now to this cursed woman and bury her, for she is a king's daughter. So it's interesting. They went on in. They left her laying there, trampled by horses, and went on in to eat. Then they say, well, we should bury her. Verse 35, but when they went to bury her, what? They found no more of her than the skull and the feet and the palms of her hand. And when they came back and told him, he said, this is the word of the Lord, which he spoke by his servant Elijah the Tishbite. In the territory of Jezreel, the dog shall eat the flesh of Jezebel, and the corpse of Jezebel shall be as dung on the face of the field in the territory of Jezreel, so that no one can say, this is Jezebel. Whoa. Oh, right. That's almost hard to read. That happened a long time ago. Yet her example, her legacy is what? What is the legacy of Jezebel? Evil, right? Think about what this woman did in her life. And then think about how her life ended. Why is it God punishes her in this way, do you think? Why so dramatically? Why so horrifically?
Her life, she made horrific for a lot of people. I mean, she,
okay.
Her whole legacy was the old drama and the agony and pain she caused.
Yeah, and look at the way she died.
They brought guilt. She had the problem with the Lord killed. She had absolutely no conscience when it comes to murder. Whatever made her life pleasant and happy is what she did.
You know, sometimes we go ahead off.
Well, you have to look at the legacy, too. I mean, even today, a lot of people remember Jezebel, and nobody with fondness.
Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking about that one time, is the name Jezebel. Like, who would name their daughter Jezebel? You're almost putting a curse on your child by naming them that because of the legacy of the name. There are certain names that we don't name our children, right? Which before the person, you know, the evil person who wore the name, it was fine. You think about Hitler, right? Adolf Hitler. Would you name a child Adolf? No, I would. No way would I do that. What about, you know, and you can go through the names like Nero and these names that just bring back this kind of evil legacy. Well, that was her legacy. All right, next week. Oh, go ahead.
My thought was, how ironic would that be the case? That it will be just as God has said, and for her to be eaten. I don't think that would be typical of someone to die, and then God had already said it way back then for that to be the absolute case in her situation. So
yeah.
God was, in my mind, God was very strategic in saying, this is, hey, y'all better take notice.
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly the point, yeah. I think you're exactly right, God. And so there's a lot more with that. We just don't have time. We'll have to end it there. I didn't get to Jehoshaphat, sorry, but we will look at that question next week, and we'll look at Jehoshaphat. He's an interesting guy, kind of complicated as well. But we'll talk about that next time. Thank you. Be dismissed and rejoin for our devotional in just a minute.